From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when Kodak made the last of its many rounds of layoffs in Rochester. The film giant once employed more than 60,000 people here. Today, it's a small handful of that number. And that, more than anything, helps us understand the challenges facing new workers and adults in the millennial generation. You've heard it many times, I'm guessing. Millennials and the following generations will have to be prepared for many career changes. They'll have to move around a lot. They'll pull together income in chunks as opposed to one job, one salary. But wait, Vox.com is out with an article that warns us maybe we've been getting it all wrong. Here's what Lyman Stone writes in a piece titled "The Myth of the Job-Hopping Rootless Millennial is Just That, a Myth." Quote, "We are currently living in a period of elevated levels of employment stability, not employment dynamism. The job-hopping millennial, indeed the job-hopping American, is a myth. You might have been led to believe that millennials, for example, were major participants in the booming gig economy, in which multiple relationships with independent contractors are cobbled together to form a career. But a recent survey by the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that the share of workers working under gig-style frameworks has actually declined in the past 10 years. The hype about an increasingly dynamic, untethered, independent workforce was just wrong. Americans today, including millennials, are less mobile, less likely to switch jobs, and generally more rooted in specific geographic areas than their predecessors." End quote. To say the least, this data surprised me. So why have we been getting it wrong about millennials, and why does Lyman Stone think the current reality is maybe a negative trend? My guests this hour include Lyman Stone, who's a Vox columnist, a regional population economics researcher who blogs at In a State of Migration, an agricultural economist at the USDA, among many other things. And let me make sure I get the last one right here, because there's many, Lyman. He's an advisor with the consulting firm Demographic Intelligence as well. Lyman, thanks for taking the time for the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And also with us here in studio, Daniel Ramo is owner of the Rochester Brainery here in Rochester. Daniel, nice to see you. Thanks for being
here. Good to see you too. Thank you.
Anna List is the managing director of Greater Rochester Enterprise. Anna, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan.
This article, Lyman, was one big well actually to me. And I actually tried to count how many actuallys are in the piece. I think there's only one or two. but the entire piece could have just been called Millennials Well Actually. What did you set out to do with this piece for the reading public like myself that has been hearing these narratives, and frankly, not just hearing a narrative and believing a narrative for the sake of it, but the reality felt like this narrative was accurate? What were your goals here with this piece?
Right, so we do see this story all the time about how millennials are footloose wanderers bouncing from job to job. You can't trust them to stay at an employer who hires them. The investments will never pay off in training, you know, all these things. And the trouble is that it's been really hard to find any confirmation of this in actual data. You look at employment data and, well, you know, job turnover is not wildly high. You look at job tenure data and, well, it's about the same it always has been, even when you control for age. You look at all sorts of things, and there's just not a lot of evidence for it. So the question is, why is this something that people feel is happening? And I think that what we're really seeing is that the social arena that people participate in, that is increasingly online, is sort of changing their perceptions of the physical world as well. That we're sort of seeing this ephemeral online socialization, and so people are just assuming it's happening in the real world as well. So they say, well, I bet that people talking online all the time makes them less likely to have in-person conversations. In fact, it doesn't. But people sort of just impute that expectation onto the world around them.
And so I'm also wondering if our listeners who hear this are going to think, wait a second, I know somebody who's switched jobs. I know someone's moved around a bit. And on a list before the program began, you made, I think, a really salient point about why this narrative might have stuck because of the periods we've just kind of come through. So it might be more fear-based than reality-based.
Right. So I represent a big chunk of the millennial population, having been born in 1985. And I came of age in the workforce, as many of my peers did, right around when the Great Recession hit. So 2008, 2009. And there was a lot of fear and instability that was instilled in all of us. And so we had to be nimble. And so it's pretty well proven that in order to increase your earning potential, the swiftest, you should go from job to job to job. Also, you know, if you get laid off, you have to find another job pretty quickly. So I think early on in the mid-2000s, there was a lot of job hopping where that's probably stabilized. And there's a culture still of fear and lack of trust, I think, in our generation around our economic fortunes.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I mean, so maybe it's just this idea. Daniel Ramo, you agree with that, having been through that same kind of thing at the same time yourself, that in the back of your mind is this idea that what do I do if the bottom falls out?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was one of the reasons why I was also born in 1985, graduated college in 2009. And when I graduated, kind of said to myself, well, I think I'm going to do multiple things because you never know. Kind of while I was working towards what I wanted to be my career, but just kind of piecing together, you know, and at that time did need to piece together because I wasn't able to find a full-time job in the field I wanted to work in. I found a part-time job in the field I wanted to work in, but taking different pieces of, okay, well, this job allows me the hours to focus on what I want to do in the future. So hobbling together multiple jobs to make that a reality for myself. So kind of reading the article, I said, well, wait, I did a different thing. But that was just me. And I'm also an older millennial as well. But yeah, it was very interesting for me to read that article and to kind of change my mind of like, oh, like I thought that as well, just like you did.
Sure. And researchers like Lyman Stone love it when people actually have the self-awareness to say, wait, that wasn't my experience, but I'm also not a scientific study.
Exactly.
I'm just a one-off anecdote.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Lyman.
It's worth noting here that it is true that hopping job to job is generally a good path to faster wage growth and success. But if there's one thing we know about millennials, is that they have much lower incomes than previous generational cohorts at the same age. That is, yes, this is a path to success. Millennials, on average, are not highly successful in these material terms compared to previous generations. So if whatever we say, well, this is how you succeed in a modern economy, we should understand that millennials will be less likely to be doing that. And that's sort of something that our image of millennial, this word millennial, if you sort of Google it and look at the images that come up and look at the presentation, what it means. Practically speaking, it means upper middle class, graduate educated white person. Whereas the typical millennial is better educated than previous generations, but is more likely to be in poverty, more likely to be minority. It doesn't quite match the image of somebody who has 9 different devices and, you know, lives in a loft apartment downtown. That's not the typical millennial.
Even if you know one who fits that.
Yes.
And Lyman, you write that in your view, this is, for lack of a better term, bad news. Let me go ahead and read from your piece now, and you can tell us more about this. You say, American society is becoming more and more rooted, permanent, and stable. This conclusion is the opposite of the take on social change you will hear in most public commentary, and the trend is a bad development. You might expect me, as a social conservative, to argue that this is a good thing, because have less change is a sort of conservative motif. But in fact, a shift toward increasing rootedness is a worrying break with the historic American norm of dynamism and mobility, end quote. So tell us more about that, because you're right. I mean, social conservatives, you would think, hey, stability, doing the same thing, mm-hmm. being in one place, mm-hmm. rooting down a community, culture, sameness, routine, good things. So take us mm-hmm. through your concerns here.
So I, of course, want people to have a connectedness with the past and a carrying on of the light, so to speak. But the trick is that what is it that we have received as an American tradition? What is our actual culture that maybe a conservative would want perpetuated? And the answer is, it's abandoning your extended family in Europe. It is saying, well, you know, maybe I should just cut all my losses and abandon this business in Saxony, because maybe it's fine, but I can do better in America. And yes, I'll lose some money here, but it'll be better for me, better for my kids, if I get up and go. And yes, it's uncertain, and it's high risk. And yes, the mortality rates of immigrants on the boat were pretty high. And yes, many of them failed and ended up going back home. We are a nation of people who survived and who persisted, and we kind of self-selected that way. And so I think that this is something that is vanishing, is that Americans are becoming increasingly conscientious, risk averse. They are staying in place. Annual migration rates are quite low right now. People are increasingly likely to live in the city of their birth. They live longer and longer in the same house. It's just, we're moving away from this norm that said, you know, get up, turn 18, leave your family, make a new home somewhere else, settle new land, so to speak. And I think that's an unfortunate thing to lose, and it's an economically concerning thing to lose, because that kind of extremely flexible labor market has been a bedrock of the American economic experience for centuries.
Anna, how do you view this in terms of the work that you do for GRE and to try to understand what's going on? Because again, if we're now understanding the data better and that this generation, the younger generation of workers, is not just itinerant and constantly moving and constantly trying new things, does it mean something to GRE to understand this data better? Can it impact the work that you're doing?
So to Lyman's point, it reminded me of this economic philosophy, the Thiebaud hypothesis, which is, you know, that people and workers can vote with their feet. You know, if you know that you can make more money and earn a better living in another geography, you will get up. The perfectly rational being that you are will get up and move your whole family or your business to that other market. But we're not all perfectly rational beings. We all have families and loved ones, and you know, we've invested a lot of time and resources into our current lifestyles. So all that's to say, in Rochester, this is a very family-oriented city. We have high quality of life and pretty low cost of living. On average, housing, utilities, and healthcare all cost between 7% and 10% less than national averages. We're about on par with national averages in terms of median income earning. Medium income for families. Also, even though population here has declined in the last 5 to 7 years since the 2010 census, the percentage of younger workers has actually grown ever so incrementally during that period. So in GRE's work, we tout the affordability of the regional economy in terms of labor force. So on average, you're paying your workers about 10% less, depending on the occupation. Real estate, housing is less expensive. Commercial and industrial real estate, whether existing infrastructure or you know, new construction, is going to be less expensive. Also, we have a lot of existing real estate and infrastructure that is underutilized or not being utilized right now. So Rochester and other mid-size markets like us are getting second and third looks from large multinational corporations because they're getting, you know, priced out of other markets, or they're looking at other markets and comparing them to Rochester, where you've got Eastman Business Park and Xerox's former facilities, et cetera. And it's a little bit more cost effective to locate here. So we're leveraging that to our advantage. Also, you know, we've gotten some high marks from a number of different reports, Brookings, CBRE, for growth in millennial population. But we're trending along with national averages. So where Rochester is seeing growth, so is Cincinnati to a different extent, Pittsburgh on a larger scale. So we are the only issue where we could use some polishing up is retention. We need to retain more of our graduates from our higher ed ecosystem. And that's a chicken and egg issue where you got to have the job opportunities to keep them here. And there also is a perception issue where some of these grads who are non-natives of Rochester, you know, I'd like to see more and more of them looking at this place as a viable geography to start their careers, start their lives, start their families.
The piece that we're talking about this hour, we've posted for you on our various social media platforms and elsewhere. We'll post it on the page for the podcast later today. It comes from Vox.com. The myth of the job-hopping, rootless millennial is just that, a myth. And Lyman Stone for Vox.com paints a much more statistically based picture of a reality that turns the narrative on its head, that millennials and younger workers right now are not just hopping job to job, not working necessarily in the gig economy, which is a real economy, but it's not new this year or the last 5 years, and it's not something that is just dominating millennial lifestyle. And so I'd love to hear from younger listeners especially, but from all listeners about this narrative, what does it mean to you to hear this? If you are especially in that millennial generation, or I guess Gen Z, which is next, you know, it's probably going to impact you, you can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. And Daniel Ramo, you know, Lyman raises the point that millennials are staying in the same jobs maybe even longer than previous generations, but not necessarily making more money. And there's this idea, I'm sure people think, well, you own a business. You own the Rochester Brainery. You just celebrated 5 years.
Yeah.
You're sticking it out. Boy, you just must be rolling. And it's it's tough. It can be, margins can be tough for any business.
Sure.
Do you think about making change? Do you think about, you know, learning from this, saying, boy, if I'm willing to be more mobile and move, or do you have a different mindset about why you're toughing it out and you're sort of growing that success incrementally?
I mean, I think for me, for Rochester Brainery, it's a couple different things. The whole point of Rochester Brainery was to help share what was going on in the Rochester community specifically, because I grew up here. Yes, I did move away for a couple of years to New York City and then move back. But ultimately, while I was in New York, I was watching all these very interesting things happen in Rochester. And every time I came back to visit, I was just bummed that I was missing all these openings and things happening and different events. So when it comes to Rochester Brainery, the whole goal was to, okay, I want to move back to Rochester and I kind of want to help promote all of the things that are going on in this city. So for me, specific to Rochester Brainery, to say this might work better in a larger city where, you know, there's more people to take classes or host events. For me, it's so much about this specific community. So for me to like move it to a larger city where I think, you know, by numbers in a business plan, it would, you know, fare better or grow quicker. That's not something that I'm necessarily interested in for that reason, I think.
Well, I'm glad it's sustainable so far.
Yeah.
5 years in, doing well. But as we talk about millennials, I see the phone ringing. We'll get to your phone calls in just a second. You know, Lyman, I want to ask you to kind of flesh out for our listeners, when you talk about the fact that millennials are willing to, I guess the data says, move less, and that might mean physically moving, or move to different jobs less often, which again goes against the narrative. Is that a way, when you look at their economic success, their earnings, is that a way of blaming this generation when the job market itself, when for various reasons there's income, you know, there's big wage gaps, you know, who would you put more of the blame on? Is this a generation of workers that should be more willing to migrate internally, to look for different jobs, to look for different careers, or is the blame elsewhere for that wage gap?
I mean, we can always I would start by saying I don't see this as a thing that we're looking to blame millennials.
Okay.
Like, oh, you would be making more money if you just picked up and moved. Because the reason for low migration, there's various reasons, but among them certainly are the excessively high cost of housing in many high employment growth cities. Certainly, poor access to credit during the recessionary credit crunch, and then sort of just a general coming of age during the housing collapse, I think, has made many in my generation rationally skeptical of the value of homeownership as an investment. And then, you know, beyond that, you've got increasingly stringent occupational licensing standards, increasingly stringent demands for credentials, sometimes excessive such demands. So I don't see this as something that I'm looking to blame millennials. I think we just have to recognize that throughout our society, and partly also because of value changes among young people, I think what we just heard about wanting to be very invested in a specific community and make a difference there, that's a very normal thing that surveys show that millennials really want in their work is connectedness to community and a feeling of meaning and values-based impact in their work. So you see a lot of this. I know lots of friends who they want to stay in a community where they think what they're doing, where they feel what they are doing is meaningful and valuable. And I certainly sympathize with that. That's
sure.
A good thing to get out of your work. But I think while there may be some values change, it's not something condemnable. It's not laziness. It's wanting to be connected into this community of worth. And then on the other hand, it's sort of a social system that we've built, and by we, I mostly mean people older than me have built, that is simply less mobile. It's just a more rigid system, a system more oriented towards sort of a European model of living, where, you know, maybe you're going to inherit your parents' occupation more often. Maybe you're just going to live in the same house that previous generations did more frequently. That's kind of where our society is moving towards. And, you know, there might be some people who like that, but I think it's not where we've historically been.
All right, listeners, let's take some of your feedback. Phone calls in just a second. You're hearing Lyman Stone, who is on the line with us. He blogs at In a State of Migration. He's an agricultural economist at USDA. He wrote the piece that we're talking about, and he's an advisor at the consulting firm Demographic Intelligence. Daniel Ramo, owner of the Rochester Brainery, in studio with us. Anna Liss, managing director of Greater Rochester Enterprise. And some of that feedback now. Let me grab Andrew in Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, Andrew. Hi, Andrew. Are you there? Can't hear him if he is. Let's do this. Andrew, I'm putting you back on hold, and I'm going to try Stephen next in Rochester. Go ahead, Stephen.
Thank you for taking my call. So it's interesting how we, or you, look at millennials. I look at millennials as human beings that are having similar struggles that we've all had growing up, depends on your age, and finding your place, maybe doing two or three jobs, maybe 10 jobs to find where you're at. I don't find that embarrassing. And I don't condemn anybody for putting the effort into working hard and figuring out who they are.
Yeah, I take the point, Stephen. I think, though, that the research indicates that this generation of workers, if you look at the millennial generation specifically, is not actually doing that any more than previous generations, that it is essentially the same or even less. This is more rooted of generation in work as opposed to the common stereotype.
Well, to me, the stereotype is coming out like the millennials are awkward, not working hard folks, kids. You know, we're doing a lot of labeling like we normally do in our society. And as I don't know anybody's ages there, but as you get older, you evolve. I mean, growing old is an evolution. And it hurts me to see how much we've done to label people, even on this show at this point. And I think it's more like everybody has their different hopes of a life's strategic plan. And you try to hang in there the best you can, and you change. Maybe you will live with your parents 10 years longer than you wanted to, or 2 years, or 2 months. You know, it's interesting how we treat people, in my opinion.
Okay. Stephen, thanks for the phone call. I'm going to kick this to Anna Liss and just ask, why are millennials so lazy? All right. Look, Anna's been, we have talked about labels. And Stephen, I actually have a lot of affection for your concern about over-labeling. And to be honest, Stephen, one of the reasons I wanted Lyman on this program today is to actually do the opposite, to do mm-hmm. less of the stereotyping of, and there are toxic stereotypes of all generations, but especially millennials. They've dealt with this whole junk that I don't think holds true any more than any other generation. Right. There are lazy people in lots of generations, all generations, in fact, but I don't think any more so in this generation. There's lots of good attributes to this generation. So, Stephen, I take that point, but I think part of the goal here was to flesh out the reality from these stereotypes. And the reality is a lot more interesting than some of the narratives that we've been kicking around for a while. So thank you for that phone call, but we're trying to do the opposite here. And when it comes to those narratives, I want to get back to Andrew's phone call because he is challenging what he's hearing a little bit of this, on this program today. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
So we do recruiting nationally and a little bit internationally. And what we're discovering is that both millennials and what we call digitals, I've never heard them called Generation Z, but I've heard them as digitals, the younger folks have two major things. One, they do seem a little more transient in the sense that their migratory pattern is very short at jobs. Mostly they indicate it's a benefit issue. And second, the other component that we hear most often from these younger generations is exactly what the earlier caller referenced, that mobility, ease of access, and real-time information is lacking. And that's been a huge challenge for finding them reasonable job opportunities and capacity. And it's one thing I was very curious to hear some of the statistics, and they've been giving those very well. But our experience has not been anything other than what the original suppositions are.
In other words, your experience is that millennials kind of follow the narrative, that they're more itinerant, that they are cobbling together work from a gig economy, that they are working more jobs. Is that what you're saying?
It appears to be. It's mostly an issue of engagement. We find that the millennials and the younger digitals tend to be engaged in a different capacity than their predecessors. And we discover that their understanding of business and computer ethics comes from a different point of view, and that really determines a lot of how they integrate with their older peers.
Okay, and Andrew, I'm just looking at data that Lyman included in his piece for Vox. The Bureau of Labor Statistics survey of job turnover shows the job quitting rates are lower today than in the year 2000. The average employee tenure for people under the age of 35, which is about 2.8 years at the same job, has been basically unchanged since 2006 and just about the same as it was back in 1983. So number of employers of the past year, things like that, those numbers are pretty stable. And so I guess what I'm hearing is you're experiencing something different, but the overall numbers indicate a slightly different picture. Andrew.
Yeah, and I guess maybe we're in a smaller area in that we recruit specifically and pretty exclusively into the technology sector for people, and those are usually traditionally younger workers or people with specific certifications that are newer certs, sometimes project managers, but those folks don't tend to A, last, and B, sustain. And the difference between the two is last at the job versus sustainment means they don't find satisfaction because their engagement process seems different.
Okay. Andrew, thank you.
Please,
go ahead, Lyman.
So one other thing, so I think this is really interesting feedback, and I hear this a lot, that I'll say something like this, and then, you know, if I'm talking to a business or a company or something, they'll say, well, that's not our experience. We wanted to hear from you because we've tended to actually be thinking about this a lot because we noticed that our young workers, that there is this kind of transiency to them. And what I would suggest is that the degree to which a company or firm experience worker transiency is highly variable across companies. And companies that tend to have more transient workers will be far more likely to outsource hiring services. What I mean is companies that have had the same workers for 20 years are not frequently hiring recruiters because they've had the same workers for 20 years. That is, that the experience of hiring and firing is extremely statistically biased towards certain profile of company, and particularly large-scale hiring and firing. So this is why things like the Bureau of Labor Statistics surveys are so useful, is because they let us get to all the people who are not participating in sort of our top-level churn of kind of high-profile hiring and firing, you know, big new openings, big closings, formal recruitment processes. I mean, half of all hires don't even have job listings associated with them. So this is an interesting thing here, is that it seems to me like what's happening is that we've got some companies that are experiencing a really high degree of transiency. And I think it's related to what was mentioned. It's a cultural difference between a lot of younger and older workers, particularly related to things like social media usage at work. But then on the other hand, other companies are jiving fine and their workers are staying longer. It's about a company culture thing.
Okay, Annalise, you want to add to that?
Sure. So I want to kick it back to, I think the caller's name is Steven, his point.
He
mentioned that other generations exhibited similar patterns of what we're talking about with millennials. One thing we haven't really talked about in the show yet is student loan debt and the fact that members of this generation are facing, you know, ginormous student loan debt burdens, and we have to take that into account when we're looking for jobs.
Yeah, more than $1 trillion. I think by the latest count, though, it's been a little while since we've talked about it in this program. I mean, roughly almost the same as credit card debt. And I take that point. Let me grab another phone call because Lyman's time is getting a little short. So let me grab Mark in Newark who wants to join the conversation. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, guys. I just want to say I'm 33 years old, so I guess I'm a millennial. But I'm a recent homeowner, and I also just I've worked since I was 16. I've had three jobs. I've been at my current job for 10 years. I just want to remind young people that even though we might not have the career mentality that some of our parents did, it's that there still are things worth being loyal to a company, seniority, vacation time, benefits, 401ks, this kind of thing still could help you in the long run. But I see the transient issue as like an experience based, like you think you're going to go live in California because you just want to be at the beach all day. Well, you still got to go and work and earn a living and pay your bills, and then you get to go to the beach maybe. But there's a lot of the cultural change is probably not much different, but our options are different where we're not getting massive pensions and retirement plans from our employers these days, but you could still stay at the same place and put your time in and get something out of it at the end to where you're somewhat taken care of. And I don't know if anybody agrees about the destination transiency. Like people think like certain areas in Seattle or Washington are the trendy places to move, but the crowds show that I think the people you can't afford to live out there if you're not making a certain amount of money.
Yeah, I mean sure.
Rochester is still small enough where you can afford to move to a surrounding community, but also transfer to the city when you need to.
Yeah, Mark, let me jump in. Thank you very much for the phone call. I mean, try moving to San Francisco. I mean, just look at the cost of living. There's certainly cost of living issues at these so-called trendy places. I take that point. But I want to ask Lyman a question before we lose him here, because we've had a number of people make comments somewhat similar to Mark. But Mark is saying, look, you know, maybe not the benefits, maybe not the pensions, but you can stay in the same job. I'm hearing from people who say, look, I'm concerned enough that if I try to jump jobs, I can't. So I may not be making as much.
Yep.
My benefits may not be as good, but I have a fear of not landing on my feet. And so far, I'm going to root down because this may be as good as it gets for a while. Now, again, this is anecdotal stuff. This is anecdotal stuff, Lyman, but this is anecdotal stuff that more matches the data that you shared in your piece. Do you agree with that, Lyman?
Absolutely. And I think this is a huge concern. And a lot of it relates to healthcare costs. Some of it relates to high student loan burdens. Some of it is that, I mean, I came of age during the recession, graduated high school essentially at the bottom of it. You know, it was sort of a very eye-opening time to be sort of entering the adult world. And I think that the generational experience there has been influential, that we've all sort of said, okay, that was really bad. Let's not have that happen to us. Be a little more cautious, you know, build a little more. You know, the gig economy is not replacing traditional employment. It's supplementing it because you can earn a little more. And beyond that, I think that the scarring effect, the psychological effect of coming of age, the recession, and then also the ever escalating price of healthcare, and then also an increasing recognition that our economy is concentrated among a fairly small number of employers in most sectors. And so there actually aren't as many options to hop jobs as there were in the past. We're dealing with increasing monopolistic or at least oligopolistic power with a few companies that if you don't work for them, you don't work.
Yeah, economic concentration is certainly, at least if you read the Matt Stollers of the world, has hollowed out some mid-sized communities like the one we're sitting in right here. I understand that concern. So, Lyman, I know I got to let you go. You want to put a little coda on the piece here? We appreciate the time today. What do you want to leave our listeners with as they think about these issues going forward?
Well, I hope that they would take that they would review critically whenever someone stereotypes a generation as being so different from others that it turns out humans don't change that much over time. Everybody's just trying to make their way, and they tend to do it in fairly similar ways over time. But after that, to keep in mind that far from the stereotype we've seen, if anything, millennials seem a little bit more job-locked and place-locked than in the past. And so if you want to think about what kind of policies might help them, you should be thinking about things to improve mobility, reducing restrictions on where you can work and live, reducing regulations that impact these things, reducing barriers to entry in these various fields, and trying to make sure that there are, in fact, a large number of employees in any given field. These aren't your standard policy mix questions. These aren't the things that are going to be on a presidential platform, so to speak. But I think they're the important things that are actually changing the generational pattern of American life.
By the way, if you want to go ahead and just change your series of writing to just, well, actually, Lyman, just give me a kickback. I think that would be really clever. I really enjoy it. And you can follow his work on Twitter to the various platforms he writes for. Lyman Stone, KY, LYMAN, Stone, KY. And Lyman, thank you very much for the time. Really interesting stuff today.
Thank you.
Let's get our only break. We're going to come back and talk with our guests in studio, get a lot more of your emails, which have piled up on this here. Daniel Ramo, owner of the Rochester Brainery, Anna List, managing director of Greater Rochester Enterprise, are here as we talk about millennial realities. The piece is called The Myth of the Job-Hopping Rootless Millennial is Just That, a Myth. We're right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, astrophysicist Adam Frank joins us first hour. His new book is all about alien civilizations and what we can learn from the light from the stars. He says climate change is something that every civilization has had to face. This is our test moment. Second hour, he sticks around to hear from climate activists. What do they think about his message and what we can learn from history and the stars? Talk to you Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So the data that came out in that Vox piece indicates that the gig economy is not the core of millennial and I guess Gen Z or digital, whatever is following the millennials.
Digital natives.
The digital natives. Yeah. It's not the core of it. The gig economy is not the core of it. But it may be a more significant supplementary factor, sort of the side hustle, so to speak, that a lot of people talk about. Anna, you mentioned several places for that, you know, whether it's ride-hailing, things like that, that you
right.
see.
Right, ride-hailing, TaskRabbit. You can teach at the Brainery if you have a special skill to lend to the community, right, Danielle?
Yep.
So ways to earn, even adjunct instructing at
Absolutely.
MCC or any
example.
Of the colleges and universities. You know, it's not going to pay a salary, but it'll help you supplement your income.
I'm sure you know many people who teach at the Brainery who are in exactly this position, yeah?
Yeah, I would say the majority of our teachers, you know, have a full-time job. And then some that don't are just teaching for fun and a little bit, you know, of extra cash every month or whatnot. So, yeah, it really varies. But we do have a lot of teachers that are coming in to supplement for, you know, whatever reason.
There's also really interesting data that came out. New York Times did a big piece on it recently on the decline in birth rates in this generation, the choice that people are making to have fewer children or to start families later is very often economically based. Sometimes not, but almost always that's the case. At least there's a number of factors and they just pile up on the economic side. And I want to read a tweet that was a response to Lyman's piece where the author of this tweet said, quote, "I wonder if intuitively the increased singledom of millennials is to blame for the rootedness. It sometimes seems easier to move as a pair, each having the other as a social or economic support, than to move as a singleton and abandon one's social network." So millennials are getting married later, they're having families later, and I think all of this intertwines there. Danielle, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I was actually, when I read the piece, I had actually thought about that myself. You know, when I moved to New York City, I moved with my now husband, then boyfriend, and would I have been able to do that on my own? You know, I don't know, maybe I would have tried, but it felt more comfortable to do that with two of us saying like, okay, there's going to be two of us that are going to be able to help each other out. You know, I wasn't moving to a city where I didn't know anyone and I was going to just have to find a random apartment and all this stuff. So actually I had thought about that. from my experience, Bob was a little bit easier for me having, you know, someone to move with.
Absolutely. And so you have a situation where millennials are working. And again, I know everybody hates these labels, but we're just talking about a cohort of age. So sorry about that. But millennials living at home longer on average. So even if they're working, they're living at home. If you're living at home, you're probably not getting married yet. So getting married later. And then the question is, why aren't they moving? So Danielle's story illustrates exactly the point. What do you make of this, Anna?
So I can only speak from my own experience, which is that my student loan payments are about on par with, if not just ever so slightly larger than my monthly rent payments. And so weddings on average, if you have a tiny wedding nowadays, even if you get married at City Hall, like there are costs associated with that. A cheap wedding costs like $20,000. Babies are a lot of money and they're only costing more and more these days. So all of my decisions to put off life decisions were based on student loans, which I is kind of depressing when you think about it. But that's true of a lot of other middle income earners in my demographic cohort. I'm starting to see as I get older and older, like I'm paying down that debt and I'm starting to open up new and better opportunities for myself. But it really is something that, like, my mom entered the workforce in 1983. There was a recession back then. She had to work a bunch of part-time jobs just to make ends meet. But she paid, I think, something like $5,000 for a Cornell education back then, which is crazy. She did the 2+2, but it's just wild to think about. So, I think it's a pending crisis between student loans and just the size of the birth rate hitting a very low figure. It's kind of alarming.
Mm-hmm. I also, you know, want to go back to a point that I raised with Lyman when he was on the program, which is, you know, not that you want to play a blame game for lower earnings for a generation, but to some degree, if we're going to talk about policy, we should. And that's why I didn't take his piece as blaming millennials for millennials earning less on average than previous generations. But I do think there are important questions about why wage gaps exist, what policies could be in play to change that. And while I didn't take his piece as a way to blame millennials, hey, be more open to change jobs, and that's a faster, as Anna pointed out at the outset of the program, a faster way to make more money is willing to change jobs. But at the same time, it's so much easier said than done. Mm-hmm. It is so much easier said than done, and I don't want anybody to take away this idea that, well, if millennials would just jump jobs, because talk to people who are looking for work or would like to make more, it is not easy to just say, well, that's the path. I don't think Lyman is saying that in his piece, but I want that sort of laid out in really firm terms here, that this isn't a case where there's an easy fix to more economic freedom, more economic higher earnings. I don't see an easy path. Do you?
It's easier for some than it is for others. So if you're 24 years old, you graduated from RIT, you're a game developer, you're working at a company here in Rochester, and you get that, you know, great job in the Bay Area that's going to pay you ever so slightly more, but you're going to take a hit to your quality of life, but you're not married and you don't have kids, you know, you're going to take that gamble and move across the country. For somebody who's a little older, who has more entrenched social and familial networks built into the fabric of the community, somebody who's married and maybe has small children, it's going to be a lot harder. You have a lot more invested. So it's you can't just, again, that Tebow hypothesis, you can't vote with your feet. You can't just up and go. And it's true also for companies themselves. So, you know, companies all the time will be like, we're going to leave town. But they have a lot invested in their workforce and their infrastructure. You know, it's hard for them to up and leave as well.
What do you think, Danielle?
Well, I mean, just touching on the student loan piece, that's kind of always, you know, been something that's at the forefront of my mind. Like, if you asked me a couple of years ago, I mean, I'm 10 years out, so some of those, you know, payments aren't as large for me now as they were, but I was just very salty about it if someone was to ask me about it. But yeah, as I've gotten older, it's gotten a little bit easier in that respect, just because I've been paying them for a while. But just in terms of student loan payments, like, that is something that, you know, you have to pay it every month. It is a fairly large line item in the budget, and definitely something that when you're looking for a job or accepting a job or maybe taking on a second job, like, that's, you know, something you really need to think about.
It's a piece of debt that can't be forgiven.
Exactly.
With bankruptcy as well. So you live with it no matter what. It's not like credit card debt.
Sure. Producer Megan Mack points us to this stat. 2018, Americans are more burdened by student loan debt than ever. In fact, the average student loan debt for Class of 2017 graduates was $39,400, up 6% from the previous year. And, of course, the other statistic I mentioned, over $1 trillion in student loan debt. It's now $1.48 trillion, so coming up on $1.5 trillion in student loan debt spread out among 44 million different borrowers. That is $620 billion more than the total U.S. credit card debt. So,
that's insane.
Okay, so my stats were a little outdated earlier. Thank you, Megan Mack, and now we're all depressed. Tom and Rochester wah, wah. Next on the phone. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay, I just wanted to say when I graduated in 62, my first car was $50, not thousands of dollars like today. We didn't have cell phones, and I'm paying thousands of dollars a year on cell phones. I don't know what college costs, but it seemed like a lot. You had to be a lot more conservative in those days. And maybe if the students would turn their cell phones off a little more, I'm just saying they'd have more money to pay on their student loans, and maybe that's a stupid idea. I don't know.
Tom, thank you for the phone call, but come on, man. I mean, I appreciate that, but talk about stereotypes. I sympathize with older adults who did not grow up with cell phones, who are annoyed with seeing people on screens a lot, and there are moments where we will all have to deal with that. But study after study shows, why are coffee shops thriving? Why are public locations thriving? Because the youngest generation wants to have face-to-face contact, wants that very badly. And so this isn't a case where if they just got off their cell phone, they'll be able to graduate college, pay off their debt, and make a big mint. And Tom, I do appreciate that. I mean, I understand your frustration at times, but that just doesn't bear out. And Linda emails us to say, maybe the better question to ask an actual millennial is why he or she is likely to stay put at a job or in a community. Is it ironically a search for connectedness in an increasingly digital world? That is from Linda. You're nodding over there, Annalise.
Yeah, so could I have greater earning potential and maybe a lot more fun living in a larger, more prosperous metropolitan area? Sure. But in Rochester, and there was this article in Curbed, which is a real estate blog back in May, about mid-sized cities being magnets for millennials these days. It's because you have a greater opportunity to make community connections, to establish leadership, to be a successful entrepreneur. For me personally, I have family here and a family legacy in the Rochester area that's important to me personally, and I know that's true of many of my peers. So there are a lot of, again, you know, we're not all perfectly rational beings. We all have baggage, stuff in our backpacks that we carry around with us that keep us weighed down where we are. So, and it's true for everyone to a different degree.
Yeah. Danielle?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the reasons why I wanted to open Rochester Brainery. And a question that I get a lot is, why don't we offer our classes online? And part of the reason we don't is because I really appreciate that in-person connection that you can make with someone, and that people can certainly develop friendships and build relationships online. That's absolutely something that can happen, but it's lovely having that connection and meeting people who are interested in the same thing as you, for those people who would prefer to connect in person, like I usually do.
Anna, we're running out of time, but we'll post that Curbed piece as well.
Sure.
I think it's interesting. What are the other takeaways from that you think are relevant here?
Sure. Just cost of living is a little bit lower. It's easier to buy a house.
Cost of living is lower where?
In mid-sized metropolitan areas like Rochester, you know, Louisville, Kentucky. And as millennials are getting priced out of larger metro areas and they're starting families, they're looking at daycare providers, other, you know, cost centers. They're thinking, hey, you know, my hometown doesn't look so bad right about now. Also, I can get really involved in my community and make a positive difference. There's an appeal to that. Mm-hmm. That's what I do for a living. Is I grew up in Rochester with a chip on my shoulder and a Kodak household, and I wanted to make a difference, so I moved back home. And sure, could I be bopping around town in Manhattan, having a great time, maybe making a better living at like Google or something like that as a social media manager? I don't know, but I don't want to live that life. I want to live in Rochester.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Danielle, let me close by asking you about your experience as now 5 years in with the Rochester mm-hmm. Brainery. And again, this community, I think, benefits in so many ways from all the different classes that are there and the sense of community. I love the idea of saying, look, we don't really want to do it online for that reason.
Sure.
But is there a moment where you'll say to yourself, look, if I can get a different job that pays X, I will shut this down? Or are you pretty committed to it if you can sort of hang in there and keep it above water?
I'm committed to it. I really am. I think for me, it's always been about if it's still, and, you know, and to be clear, I mean, I do work as a social media manager in addition to Rochester
Side
Brainerd.
Gig, right?
Absolutely, side gig. But for me, as long as the community sees the value in Rochester Brainerd, and it can be a service to everyone, like, that's very important to me. So as long as that can keep on going and that is a benefit, I'll keep on going as long as I can.
Okay.
That's kind of my view of it.
And Anna, you're staying here.
I'm sticking around town. You can't get rid of me. Drag me out kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
The piece that brought us here is the myth of the job-hopping rootless millennial is just that, a myth. A lot of interesting data in there. Our thanks to Lyman Stone, who wrote the piece for Vox, for joining us earlier this hour. We'll post it for you. And our thanks to our guests here in studio, Anna Liss, Managing Director of Greater Rochester Enterprise, card-carrying millennial and proud Rochesterian. Nice having you back here.
Thank you.
And Daniel Ramo, owner of the Rochester Brainery. Also a card-carrying millennial,
yep.
And also maybe the proudest, though that would mean that you're prouder than Anna, but among the proudest Rochesterians. Fair enough?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Thank
show.
You.
Thanks for being here.
Thank
nice
you.
Nice having both of them. Nice having you along. Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you have a nice afternoon, and we're back with you Tuesday on member-supported public radio.